नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. First Canto, Chapter 11, Text Number 12. Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. Sarvartu Sarva Vibhava Punya Vriksha Latashramai Ujjano Pavananamair Vritta Padmakara Shriyam Sarvatu Sarva Vibhava Sarvatu Sarva Vibhava Punya Vrikshalata Shramai Punya Vrikshalata Shramai Ujjano Pavanaramai Ujjano Pavanaramai Vritta Padmakara Shriyam Vritta Padmakara Shriyam Sarvartu Sarva Vibhava Punya Vrikshalata Shramai Ujjano Pavanaramai Vritta Padmakara Shriyam Vibhava Ujjamano Pavanaramaya Vritta Padmakara Shriyam. Ladies. Vibhava Sarva. All. Ritu. Seasons. Sarva. All. Vibhava. Opulences. Punya. Pious. Vriksha. Trees. Lata. Creepers. Ashramai. With hermitages. Udyana. Orchards. Upavana. Flower gardens. Aramai. Pleasure gardens and beautiful parks. Vritta. Surrounded by. Padma Akara. The birthplaces or of lotuses or nice reservoirs of water. Shriyam. Increasing the beauty. Purport, our translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. The city of Dwarkapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water, breeding lotus flowers all over. Please repeat. The city of Dwarkapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks and reservoirs of water, breeding lotus flowers all over. Wow, what a scene. Purport. Perfection of human civilization is made possible by utilizing the gifts of nature in their own way. As we find herewith in the description of its opulence, Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens and fruit orchards, along with reservoirs of water and growing lotuses. There's no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are the necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. The propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there, even in the heart of modern civilized man. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential quarters in a place where there are such naturally beautiful gardens and reservoirs of water. But they leave the common men to reside in congested areas without parks and gardens. Herein, of course, we find a different description of the city of Dwarka. It is understood that the whole dham, or residential quarter, was surrounded by such gardens and parks with reservoirs of water where lotuses grew. It is understood that all the people depended on nature's gifts of fruits and flowers, without industrial enterprises promoting filthy huts and slums for residential quarters. Advancement of civilization is estimated not on the growth of mills and factories to deteriorate the finer instincts of the human being, but on developing the potent spiritual instincts of human beings and giving them a chance to go back to Godhead. Development of factories and mills is called Ugra Karma, or pungent activities, and such activities deteriorate the finer sentiments of the human being and society to form a dungeon of demons. We find herein the mention of pious trees which produce seasonal flowers and fruits. The impious trees are useless jungles only, and they can only be used to supply fuels. In the modern civilization, such impious trees are planted on the sides of roads. Human energy should be properly utilized in developing the finer senses for spiritual understanding, in which lies the solution of life. Fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks and reservoirs of water, with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers, and cows giving sufficient milk and butter are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. As against this, the dungeons of mines, factories, and workshops develop demoniac propensities in the working class. The vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class, and consequently there are severe clashes between them in so many ways. The description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal of human civilization. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Munitam Jena Tasmai Sigurave Namah. Mukham Guru Deva Chalam Pangam Langayate Girinat Kipadamam De Sigur Tiranam Paramananda Madhavam Sishtitaneshwaram. Wow. Another monumental purport by Srila Prabhupada. And which, again, is applicable to all time and space. Even though these verses, these translations, these words of Shukadeva Goswami are going back so many thousands of years, they're still applicable to modern society. And although Srila Prabhupada's purport was spoken only just recently, within our lifetimes, it hits the nail, so to speak, right on the head. That here we're seeing the description of real beauty, not the beauty of so-called modern society. Generally, when people go into a city they've never been, what do they look for immediately? They look for the skyline, right? It's basically what they look for. Oh my gosh, look at that tall skyscraper, or look at that Ferris wheel. Or when people go to, say, Las Vegas or something, thousands go there, millions go there, and they look for the colossal constructions which are just brick and mortar, and they're ugly as anything. They're sort of repulsive, actually, and with lights shining so bright that you're just blinded. No surprise that when people drive along the freeway, they don't get into accidents looking at all of this phantasmagoria, because that's all it is. It's just phantasmagoria. No one remembers where that sky comes from. Who created that beautiful sky? Instead, we're enamored by some tall skyscraper building which the next morning, if you've ever been to such places, the next morning that beautiful area, so-called beautiful area, is full of garbage, full of drunks and urine in the street. So it's not a sign of a beautiful place or the happiest place on earth, like some people like to advertise them, right? As soon as somebody wins something, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the happiest place on earth. Have you ever been to that happiest place on earth? I have. I've been there a few times. It wasn't very happy. I didn't go there. I had to go with a relative. They paid the way, and they were in a wheelchair, so we got to go in real quick. We didn't have to wait in the lines for forever. And then when you go there, it's not happy. Everybody's miserable. They're waiting in lines. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too crowded. The food is terrible. People screaming. Kids. This, that. It's not the happiest place on earth. There's no doubt about that. So these places are not human society. It's not meant for human society. Srila Prabhupada points out here in the very first line, he points out that the perfection of human civilization is made possible by utilizing the gifts of nature in their own way. Nature is already providing a system. There's already a natural law. Of course, the demoniac don't want to accept that. Asyattam apatistam che jagarru anishwaram. There's no foundation. There's no controller. It's all just some temporary creation that we can just enjoy to the max and exploit in whatever way we like. But no, nature already has, as Prabhupada points out here, naturally provided gifts. They're already there. And it's a natural beauty. Srila Prabhupada comments that even the birds, they take these sticks. They take sticks and they can build a little nest. They go out and they find a piece of shred, and they put a little insulation in their nest. And even the rats make tunnels. So what is the use of, he was comparing this to, we're so proud of our subways, but the rats are also making subways all over the place. And the birds are also making these brick and mortar sticks, because they're, all it is just sticks. And the proof is that as soon as there's a fire that breaks out, it's demolished. Everything's burnt to the ground. It's not like in former times. Even you go back 50 years, buildings were built in a different way. Now they're just sticks with a little bit of plaster. And as soon as a fire starts, it's finished, all gone. So even the animals are making their homes, their tunnels. So there's nothing to be proud of that we've created such a beautiful skyscraper, which is just nothing but a bunch of sticks and some bricks. But we're so overcome by the material nature and misinformation. The general mass of people are just ignorant. They don't know any better. In reality, they don't know any better. They don't have any realization or information of something that's much greater. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're seeing that these descriptions of Dwarka are real opulence. Nature is providing all of the natural opulences of that are necessary for a human existence, right? There's water. We don't have any water here. If the water were cut off, what would we do? People would go crazy. They would storm, you know, the grocery stores, or if they know the neighbor has some water, they'd storm his place. Or if there's a cutoff of electricity, what do people do? They have no solution. It would turn into a madhouse. Basically, people would turn into animals or dungeon, as Prabhupada points out here. Such activities deteriorate the finer sentiments of human society, and society becomes a dungeon of demons. That is the destination of such a society. There's no doubt. That is the end point. And that's already predicted in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what will happen in the latter parts of Kali Yuga. It will become a dungeon of demons. There's no doubt about that. So, what to do? Well, we can try and adopt some of the principles and instructions given to us here in the Vedic literatures. These descriptions they're real. They're not of some phantasmagoria. They're not just some poetic stories, but they're reality. And here it's described how Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens and fruit orchards, along with reservoirs of water and growing lotuses. There's no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, because that's what they have to do. Again, a society which doesn't have any information or alternative, what do? They produce mills and factories where people are working in deplorable conditions. Otherwise, how can they support these metropolises? There's no other way. Everyone has moved from the country where living is natural, and they've gone into these gigantic dungeons of brick and mortar, sticks, and some stones. And what do they have to do? They have to work in some hellish condition to survive, to get a little bit of food that's already polluted. And what is it? It's generally the slaughterhouse food, that which is provided by the slaughterhouse. It's a nightmare. But most people don't see it. They're consumed by their sense gratification, by their material desires, and mismanagement. Basically, mismanagement. Shrimad Prabhupada points out here right at the end of the purport, description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal of human civilization. It's the duty of good government. When there's no good government, when there's no good leadership, this is the end result. It's not a mystery. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential. They make sure that they're very comfortable in their gated communities, which, for all practical purposes, they become prisoners to that as well. They don't dare go outside. And don't try and get inside because it's fortified. So they make sure that they have some very nice, comfortable situation. But the general mass of people, the common person, they live in some tin shack. And if you've gone to such places that are especially overcrowded, I remember going to some places in Bangkok and in Singapore. There's certain areas that are, of course, it's everywhere. It's not just there, but there was such a stark contrast between gigantic malls, shopping centers, where thousands of people walk through and their eyes are lit up by all the glitter. And you look outside behind a place, and it's just tin shacks. It's tin shacks. That's where people have to live that work in those high-rise, glittering monuments to material life. So it's just remarkable how Srila Prabhupada is so right on. In every line he gives here in this purport is just unbelievable. It's uncanny. The propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there. It's a fact. It's there within the heart. Anandamoya Bhyasat, the living entity, is naturally pleasure-seeking. It's not that we go out looking for some misery. We don't go, there's no one shouting on the corner, please hit me. Please give me some misery. No. Instead, we're looking for some situation where we can be at ease, where we can live in a very comfortable setting and in a human setting. But advancement of civilization, and Prabhupada points out here that the modern estimation of life is on the growth of mills and factories or the stock market. Life is based on what the stock market does, which is just a gambling and creates or encourages the cheating propensity. So all of these things that is going on here, all these things that are going on in society are just meant for the degradation and the deterioration of the human being and their finer sentiments, as Prabhupada points out here. It's simply our ugra karma or pungent activities. Right? Activities which are meant to degrade people and create havoc in our everyday lives. There's no benefit to them. It's simply degrading and destroying civilization. Srila Prabhupada points out here that in a pious society, even the trees they produce, even the trees produce something in a pious society. But in an impious society, what do we find? We just find jungles of useless trees that are, as he points out, planted along the roadside that end up tearing up the sidewalks and highways. You go from here to the airport, there's a section of road there where they planted these big, huge, I don't know what kind of trees they are. They offer some tree, they offer some shade, I guess. But the reward is that it's tearing up the highway, it's tearing up the sidewalk. So now they have to tear them all out before somebody breaks their neck walking along the road. It's all works that are meant to cause distress in our lives. So even the trees, which in pious society produce flowers and fruits which are meant for human sustenance. We're meant to survive on those wonderful products. Not that we get so many trees that are not doing anything. They're not doing anything, practically speaking. There's no benefit to them except for fuel. Except for fuel. And we can see just recently we have so many trees just north of us. What are they? They're just simply fuel. They're burning the whole country, the whole landscape, wiping out communities. Of course, there's also some reasoning why such fires occur and why the climate is changing, if it is for some people. Some people may not believe it. Or why there's such a karmic reaction that's going on. It's because, again, a society is engaged in so many impious works. Instead, human society should be utilized for developing the finer tissues for spiritual understanding. Right? They should be engaged in austerity. Austerity, learning how to control the senses. I should be developing truthfulness. Learning how to avoid these cheating activities. And should be engaged in developing cleanliness. And not taking foods and intoxicants that are degrading people like anything. And above and above all, developing the quality of mercy. Srila Prabhupada has given us these four principles very nicely. Right? No illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. It's very scientific. It's very practical. And Krishna also gives that those instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Samoda mastabak saucham shantir ajivam shantir ajivam Arjavam eva cha, gyanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavacha. There are certain qualities that have to be developed in human society. Society has to be managed in such a way that those qualities can, that there's a conducive atmosphere to develop those qualities. If we don't do that, then what is the use of this government? What is the use of this human form of life, practically speaking? We have to learn how to become peaceful. People, there's no question. There's nothing but strife and a war going on in the world. People have no idea what a real peacefulness means. Even in the family units, there's no peace. There's some anxiety and trouble going on. And of course, there's self-control. Self-control has to be there. We can't just just be indiscriminate in anything and everything we do. And again, that's being promoted. Just do it. Who cares? Just do it. If it feels good, do it. Why not? Hey, you know, if it feels good to get a gun, just go get a gun. Just blast away. It's madness. One has to learn how to develop the question of austerity. Not that we just live lavishly at others' expense. And this is basically what's going on. At the expense of other people, certain people just live lavishly. They live, it's almost obscene how much wealth they have, and they continue with it with no regard. There's no, what is the word, a compunction. They don't have any regard for what the suffering condition of someone else may be. They're useless people. They're useless people. Just build a structure and restrict them. Make a wall that's about 10,000 feet high. Put all kinds of barbed wire on it, whatever you want to do. Keep these people away. We don't want them. We don't want them to disturb our peacefulness, our lives. So, and purity. There's no question of that. There's no purity of heart and a mind in the world. People are engaged in so many sinful activities. There's no purity in their thoughts. They just look for something, and when they see it, it's an object of their sense gratification, whether it be he or she. This is our mentality in the world. There's no interest. And Krishna says tolerance, shantir, that one has to be tolerant. Things sometimes do not go our way. That happens. But one has to be tolerant of that. Sometimes the weather may not be so pleasant. Sometimes the conditions, social conditions or economic conditions may not be right. So one has to learn how to tolerate these things. Human life, tapo divyam, it's meant for austerity. And there's meant to be, we're meant to be tolerant of certain conditions. Of course, sometimes you get into, I remember a few times when you go to crowded places, first thing that comes to my mind is Savas and I were traveling south, going from Madras to, or Madurai, or, yeah, it was Madras. It's called Chennai now. To Kedarnath. I'm sorry, to Madurai, which is way in the south. And we were on a bus, and it was so crowded. It was really hard to be tolerant. It was something. What an experience. But sometimes you just have to learn how to be tolerant. Because sometimes conditions may not be to your liking. But still, one has to learn these things. Arjavam. There has to be some honesty. If we live in a society where for one's benefit, one can create all kinds of stories and lies and do all kinds of intrigue. Where is the and be a leader at the same time? It's not possible. It's not possible for the common person to develop these qualities. when they see that example. Gyanam vijnanam, a knowledge and a wisdom. So all these qualities, as Prabhupada points out here, they should be properly utilized in developing the finer sentiments of a human being for spiritual understanding. They have to be developed. This description of Dwarka makes that point. It gives us that perfect example of human society. Just the words that the way Srila Prabhupada writes here, how the fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens and parks and swans and birds and sufficient milk. These are all essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. What to speak of spiritual life is just common needs that have to be there for human existence, and but here the vested interests flourish at the cost of working class, while they're making their intrigue, the general mass of people suffer, and practically it turns into a dungeon, as Prabhupada points out here. So these, what to speak of the severe conflicts that come as a result of it. There's nothing but that. So this description given in the Srimad Bhagavatam here, these are ideal examples. They're the example that we should learn to emulate, and it starts by just as Dwarka was overseen by the Supreme Lord Himself, it starts by having a good leader in society, and that's what this Krishna consciousness movement is trying to do, is trying to teach, is trying to develop that Brahminical society, that Brahminical leadership, which is necessary for advancement. So we'll end there. Are there any questions or comments? Sachit Tanoi Prabhu.
Beautiful description in that verse. A lot of information. So deep. Can be talked for months and months.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It just reminds me, we just had Prabhupada festival and Giriraj Maharaj spoke, and in one of his memories he mentioned that he was, I think, called by Prabhupada to come, and then he mentioned that, I'm paraphrasing, would you think, Prabhupada asked Giriraj Maharaj, would this movement will go on? And yeah, provided the devotees do as a sincere and do this and that. Prabhupada answered, yeah, obviously. But Prabhupada said, yes, organization and an intelligence and organization. So I'm just saying that this is a wake-up call for all of us. And also, we also seen or heard another purpose in which Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the future, if we're ready and there's a big catastrophe happening, people will come, and where will they go? They go to the people who are intelligent. We're supposed to provide that.
And organize.
Join us, yeah. They will join us. So this is something to think about it. And obviously, you know, we also have many priorities. But if we can start thinking and prioritize something like this, at least talk more about it and make it actually a reality. Because otherwise, if we cannot help our own selves here, how can we going to help other people there? And that means that if we start considering that, you know, we're living in a crowded city, like the description there is so horrible. If there's time for evacuation, where are we going to go?
We have to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. So then, so this is so beautiful. If you can say something else more about that.
Well, you've said it all. I mean, we just have to talk about it. Bring it back to me.
Yeah, thank you, Boo. As you said, very amazing purport. You did a good job expanding upon it or further explaining all the different points. So I get it. You know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this material world is a temporary, miserable place wherein repeated birth and death take place. And so Prabhupada zoomed in on one particular aspect of it. You know, how Uga Karma is not helping people develop their finest sentiments. You know, it's not conducive for the development of spiritual consciousness. And whereas living in harmony with, you know, natural arrangements made by Krishna would be. Ultimately, devotees aren't even interested in living nicely in harmony with nature. They're interested in spiritual consciousness. So my question is this, that twice this morning I've heard, and once in the reading from the Bhagavatam and when we were reciting the translation to the Dhamma Dharastika prayers, devotees were expressing, Prabhupada expressed in his purport how a devotee, he's not interested in any benediction. He's not even when liberation is offered by the Supreme Person, a pure devotee, he refuses to accept it. And then in this morning in the Dhamma Dharastika prayers, it's saying how the oh Lord, you can give all kinds of benedictions. I do not pray to you for eternal life in Vaikuntha nor any other boon. And I'm just wondering, and what is asked for in both those cases is just remember. You know, Prabhupada says here, the devotee just wants to be able, the only benediction he wants is to be able to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the song it's asking just to be able to remember the childhood pastimes of Krishna. So my question is this, what is this remembrance? In other words, how could a devotee pass up the opportunity to go back to Godhead, have eternal life in Vaikuntha or in Goloka Vrindavan with a spiritual body, and all they're asking for is just to be able to remember. I mean, what is that, you know, what kind of remembrance are we talking about? Because sometimes I remember, and I would much rather, if I was asked, well, do you want to just remember or do you want to have a spiritual body and live eternally? I'd take the former. I mean, I'd want to go back to the spiritual world. I mean, when it says remember here, could you elaborate or give us some insight onto what is really meant by, what kind of remembering are we talking about here when these devotees are praying like that?
I think those prayers are very elevated. They're meant for very advanced devotees. For someone to pray like that, they're very advanced in their love for Krishna, and it's something for us to strive for sure. In our state, at least in my state, I need, and Srila Prabhupada comments, he's commented, for instance, in his creating Mayapur Dham in having certain facilities there. For my Western disciples, he said, for my disciples, to make it comfortable for them. So that's there to facilitate, give us a little, what's the word?
Concession.
Encouragement impetus for executing the process. So sometimes facilities have to be there when you're in a neophyte state. And as a neophyte, to live in a clean place, which is where nice prasadam is offered to the deities, it really helps me. For the more advanced devotees, I can just have whatever fruit falls to the ground or whatever space is there underneath the tree, that's special. And we should strive for that, certainly. But if we're not on that, at that level, then creating a nice facility for devotees to execute Krishna consciousness so that they can get to that point, there's nothing wrong with that. That would be my answer. Those prayers are very advanced, and we should strive for it, but in our state, at least in my state, I need more. Yeah, why not? We're desiring. We want to desire Krishna's service. We definitely want to get out of this miserable material world. In that sense, we want a liberation from all of this. We're not looking to be liberated into some impersonal form or... our liberation is that we want to be liberated from material attachments and material life and be engaged 100% in Krishna's seva. Our minds and souls, everything is focused on that. Archita Prabhu?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. It's not by accident that Krishna gave you this verse to speak on. Because here's this wonderful description of Durga Puri and the lakes and the swans and the lotus flowers and the fruit trees. So being the property manager of New Dwarka, somebody may rightfully ask you, where are the lakes and the fruit trees and the lotuses? I mean, to be fair, we do have some very nice spots here, Prabhupada's garden. As a photographer, I go back there and I'm amazed. It's just one little fountain attracts so many birds to bathe and drink, and the flowers have taken so many hundreds of pictures of those flowers back there. But in general, we own half a block both sides of the street. We could obviously have more. Where are the lotus flowers? Here in Southern California, there are so many spiritual societies. Practically, their entire property is a big garden because they know the public will come. They have lakes, they have lotuses, they have... So somebody may rightfully ask you as a property manager, where are the lotuses?
Yeah, where are the fruit trees? Where are...
Fruit trees, yeah.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. We need more fruit and flower producing plants and a nicer, a conducive atmosphere for all the birds. And I think once in a while I see a hummingbird buzzing around my balcony because I put up a little feeder. But no, we've got a long way to go. Maharaj, you had a comment?
There is.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, anything else?
Yeah.
One last.
Sorry that we're over time. This relates to Satya Tanoi's question a little bit. What do you think Prabhupada would respond if he knew? Because we're living in the city as devotees to preach, but there's also many devotees living in the city that are, they're not preachers, which is, they're not directly preaching, but they have, you know, they're working for some mundane boss and they're just paying rent in their house and their kids are going to public school. And I don't, it was this Prabhupada's idea that this should be going on, or that should those families be living in one of our farm communities and contributing that way, or what would your response be to that?
You know, I think that's a long answer. The fact that Srila Prabhupada went into New York City to start Krishna consciousness movement in the West shows that there's a need for preaching in the city. And most of his preaching work was focused in that way, developing preaching in city environments. Unfortunately, because society is not developed in a very Krishna conscious agrarian way, that's not there. So what to do? You have to go into the city and you have to help those persons who are entangled in that sort of life. For a devotee living, this is just my personal thing, for a devotee living in a temple, if they're not engaged in some way facilitating the preaching, then why are they here? I would have to say that. Why are you here if you're in the city and you're not facilitating the preaching somehow? Now, there may be a discussion about how, to what degree somebody is facilitating the preaching. That is another thing. But if you're in the city and you're not facilitating the preaching, then what are you here for? I wouldn't want to raise my family in a city. I would live in a more sattvic setting. It's a matter of choice. But as long as they're here, they should be trying to help and not just maintaining. That's what is the purpose of just maintaining in a dungeon. Yes, Prabhu.
That's why Peter Gopal wanted to establish these self-sufficient communities in Varanasi, is because we're the only people that actually even know the proper way to live. And so if we can learn how to actually be self-sufficient and learn on the land, we can set a perfect example.
Yeah. Anything else?
Just one last important point to that. We've never been a society, of course. No force of person can do this or that. Way back as far as we were living in an agrarian society, we were not a farmer. We were so. Prabhupada came out of, you could say, an agrarian background. He was not good going in with pharmacists. But we never used force. Krishna consciousness is so nice that wherever you are, whatever your inclination is, practically, you can use. So Prabhupada's inclination to be a pharmacist was used for the Krishna consciousness. He made money and he gave it to the Lord God. So we don't force anyone. If you have that natural inclination, that's what's missing. We've taken city people and tried to get into the farmers and it doesn't work. They last a year or two and then they go running back to the city. If you want farmers, turn farmers into the boats. Those are out there farming right now. You go to travel Tepka, stop into the farming village and appreciate it. Get them by the deal and try to get them to the boats. That's how you get self-sufficient farmer village. You can't turn city sitters like myself into the farmers. It doesn't work. You go to get another for a year or two and you go on your back to the world.
Just on
it. I lived in Alaska for a few years. And I told Mara, I said, all right, I'm not coaching them. I can't stay there. You have to go back. I want to stay there when they come outside. So you have to find people who are inclined to do those things. And preach it and make them into the voting farm.
One quick thing is that in the vegan movement, one of the most vocal and well-known and influential speakers used to be a cattle farmer up in Wyoming or Montana. He used to be a big, big meat producer. And he just flipped. And now he's one of the strongest and most influential speakers on that side. And it just shows that he knows what he's talking about because he grew up in it. And for him to flip and start speaking about animal slaughter and the abuse of animals, etc., is very, very influential. It's been very potent. So we should go out and find those people who are ready to flip and teach them what real society and human life should be, how it should be led, whether it's animal rights or whether it's vegetarianism or even yoga or whatever, spiritual groups. There are so many people out there and so many different organizations. They have some information. They have some natural inclination. They've spent years studying it. Those are the people that could be very useful for us to turn around. It would make a big difference. Our business should be to educate them. We have to be educated so we can educate them. Srila Prabhupada.